Good afternoon. It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 35 degrees right now. We're looking for isolated snow showers. Mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 36. Southwest winds to 20 miles per hour should decrease to 10 miles per hour this afternoon. For tonight, 20% chance of snow before 3 a.m., then mostly clear skies, turning to mostly cloudy skies toward daybreak with a low around 28 overnight. For Thursday, chance of snow before noon, then a chance of rain and snow. Mostly cloudy skies on Thursday with a high near 37. Northwest winds to 10. We'll turn to the southeast in the morning and gust as high as 25 on Thursday. Coming up on the Midday News, the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has a new case count for COVID-19 cases for us. A big storm is coming our way. Talk of the Rock, we had some local journalists talk about COVID.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi continues to push for a measure that would increase the amount of coronavirus relief checks. The House this week passed a bill that would boost payments from $600 to $2,000, but it's been blocked by the Senate. Pointing a finger at Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Pelosi says there's no reason to dismiss legislation that has bipartisan support.
The Democrats and Republicans in the House have passed that legislation. Who is holding up that distribution to the American people? Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans.
McConnell says the measure has no realistic path to quickly pass the Senate. He also says Republicans will not be bullied into passing the bill despite increasing pressure from Democrats and President Trump. Senator Josh Hawley says he plans to object when Congress votes to certify the Electoral College results next week. NPR's Kelsey Snell reports that Hawley, a Missouri Republican, is the first senator to publicly announce plans to push back against the process.
Hawley says he plans to object in order to highlight issues with states implementing election laws and what he describes as interference from big tech companies. He joins a number of House Republicans who intend to offer similar objections. Together, they can force a short delay in the process of certifying the Electoral College results. Their objections will almost certainly be voted down, and Congress is still expected to certify Joe Biden as the president-elect. Hawley's move would defy Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other Republican leaders who are opposed to any congressional intervention in the process. GOP leaders fear a vote that would pit their members against President Trump and his supporters. Kelsey Snell, NPR News, Washington.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has signed off on the post-Brexit trade deal that will avert the most severe impacts of the country's split from the European Union. Terry Schultz reports the agreement was signed by the EU earlier today and flown to London.
Johnson says the trade and customs deal signed with the EU is not an end, but the beginning of what he says will be a, quote, wonderful relationship with the EU.
It's an excellent deal for this country, but also for our friends and partners.
UK lawmakers complained about being given only one day to debate the 1,200-page agreement that will replace the current transitional arrangement starting January 1st. The accord will be considered provisional until the European Parliament votes on it, and that could come as late as March. EU lawmakers refused to rush after negotiations concluded on Christmas Eve and will only start scrutinizing the deal next month. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 73 points, the Nasdaq up 19. This is NPR News in Washington.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported 22 new COVID-19 cases for the Kodiak Island Borough, including 5 community transmission cases and 17 close contact cases. This brings the total case count to 906 cases since the start of the pandemic, with 81 cases classified as locally active. There have been 37 local hospitalizations to date, with 2 patients currently hospitalized. There have been 5 deaths to date in Kodiak. The collision of a warm, wet weather front and a mass of cold air from Siberia could set a new record, the lowest barometric pressure ever recorded in the North Pacific. That could mean hurricane-force winds and high seas in the southeastern Bering Sea this week.
This storm is generating a lot of interest from weather watchers around the world because it is going to wind up, in all likelihood, being one of the deepest low-pressure systems that has ever been seen in the Bering Sea.
Rick Toman is a climate specialist with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says the storm, which is expected to reach Unalaska by Thursday night, will be comparable to storms that hit the area in 2014 and 2015. Those storms caused wind damage in both Unalaska and the Pribilof Islands.
But because this storm is going to be very far west, like the 2014 ex-typhoon Nuri, we're not expecting those kind of damaging winds to move into the eastern Aleutians or the Pribilofs, but certainly we'll notice the weather front.
The National Weather Service climatologist Brian Beckschneider also says that boaters in the Bering Sea could run into seas as high as 40 feet during the storm. And while the brunt of the storm won't reach more populated areas in the Aleutians, Brett Schneider says it will still have weather effects for a large part of Alaska.
The fact that that storm is going to be there, we're going to have high pressure over the Yukon, means we're going to have, you know, an easterly flow, and which is going to bring colder temperatures.
Brett Schneider says that tracking records like this is important for scientists as they study climate change in the region. KMXT's Jared Griffin and Kodiak Daily Mirror's Andrew Kinnison spoke with KMXT's Dylan Simard on Talk of the Rock to talk about the stories of the last month and the long shadow the pandemic has cast on every story this year, and a very COVID Christmas. The 3 reporters unpacked some of the most inspiring stories that they had covered in the last month and some of the lessons that they learned along the way. Jared Griffin was first to speak.
One that I worked on right around Thanksgiving had to do with the Aleutic Museum's Meeting Arts project that was coming to an end after 3 years. And it's called the Pingwat Project. And I really liked working on this story because it's a story that basically began 150 years ago when a French explorer came in and took a lot of artifacts from a lot of Aleutic artifacts back to Europe. And so there's this kind of, the Aleutic Museum has kind of been working on this either reclamation and, you know, sharing some of these cultural artifacts. And this was one project that they got these fabulous beaded garments from a museum in France that, you know, belong to the Aleutic people. And it's I liked it because it was the epilogue, I guess, for a 3-year long kind of story that I think just about every reporter at KMXT and Kodiak Daily Mirror has picked up a piece of this story over the past 3 years.
Andrew spoke on a not altogether uncommon problem in journalism of ensuring that stories reflect the lived experiences of people and not solely the descriptions of hardship from persons of authority.
I did a story about sort of elder care in Kodiak and sort of the time of COVID. And obviously these are some people who are most vulnerable to the virus. I mean, I think something like around a third of all deaths from COVID has been in assisted living homes. So they have had to level some pretty serious restrictions. I mean, with good reason, obviously, and but that doesn't mean it hasn't been hard on people who live there. So I had the opportunity to talk with a few residents at the Elder House, a few residents at Sunrise Assisted Living, and you know, I don't know, but I mean, I think it just highlighted the sort of like common reporting issue is that as you all probably know, is that you're always trying to find like the actual person who's experiencing the thing. You
right.
know, it's very easy to get a hold of, you know, in this case, like Providence's public relations people who are great and they're good to work with. And then that's sort of like the top layer. And then you could sort of get in touch with like the people who run the other house under Providence. And then they could put you in touch with people who are actually experiencing these things. You have to kind of work down through those layers
right.
of people. And, you know, a lot of times I don't have the time or the energy to like work down through all those layers.
Yeah.
And so I like this story because I was able to actually get to the, you know, the bottom layer, so to speak,
right.
to follow my analogy here. So yeah, I mean, any time that you get a chance to do that is a lot of fun. So yeah, so that I appreciated being able to talk to those people.
At the end of the show, the reporters discussed predictions for 2020 and why maybe we shouldn't even bother.
I don't do predictions.
Gosh. 2020 has sort of been the year where my sense of wanting to do predictions has completely faded. I mean, think about where we started at the beginning of this year and where we are now. Sitting in a room with masks on.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, that's it. It's you can't make predictions. Every time you tried to this year, it didn't go anywhere, or the complete opposite happened. Or
one piece of advice I heard recently was that if you make a prediction, you should write it down, because a lot of people make predictions and they never actually see if they're actually true. I know I've done that before.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So like if you ever like try to make an actual prediction, you should write it down.
KMXT's Talk of the Rock airs every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. and features local guests discussing local issues. If you know any local guests or local issues who would be appropriate guests or appropriate on Talk of the Rock, give us a call at 486-3181. Bristol Bay's first COVID-19 vaccines were administered last week, and they're continuing this week. It's going smoothly so far, but as KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, healthcare providers are dealing with some tricky logistics as they plan to get the vaccine to more rural communities.
Dr. Tessa Walker-Linderman is the DHSS lead for the Alaska COVID-19 Vaccination Task Force. She told reporters Monday the state health department is still in the very early part of the vaccine rollout.
We are still in phase 1A in terms of who Alaska is vaccinating, but discussions about future phases are happening.
Federal health officers are shipping doses of both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines as fast as they can be manufactured and packaged. Dr. Ann Zink, Alaska's chief medical officer, says the state received about 60,000 doses of the vaccine this month, about 10 times more than expected.
At the beginning of December, we thought we were getting like 6,000, just over 6,000 doses to start. And again, we've had to change plans drastically and dramatically on a very regular basis. So we are working on these like super tight timeframes. And so when people say like, I want to know what date I am, like, we don't know how much we're getting in next week.
First come, first served appointments for those last folks in Phase 1A, essential healthcare workers, will be opened on Wednesday on the state's COVID-19 website, covidvax.alaska.gov. Those appointments will begin January 4th. The next big question is, who will be vaccinated in Phase 1B, much later in January? The Federal Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or ACIP, determines the priority groups for who should get the vaccine first, but leaves it up to states and tribes to make the allocations. ACIP recommends that Phase 1B includes people age 75 and older, and frontline essential workers, such as emergency responders, teachers, and grocery store workers. Alaska has its own Vaccine Allocation Advisory Committee. It held a workshop Monday to give an update and take public comment about the next steps. Zink says for Phase 1B, the Allocation Committee is looking at three principles: logistics, science, and equity, to get the vaccine out fast, effectively, and fairly.
Across all sorts of different groups, taking into consideration their work, their ability to protect themselves, the service that they provide, and the increased morbidity and mortality we might see, such as like if a hospital system becomes overwhelmed, age, underlying medical conditions.
For the workshop, the task force received 347 written comments, and 52 people signed up to speak about who in Alaska are those essential workers. Commenters represented groups like electric utilities, older Alaskans, water and wastewater utilities, gas and oil companies, and teachers groups. Here are Stacey Mars, Lee Ryan, Elizabeth Petrasik, and Brent Payne.
We have 39 staffed courts across the state. I would love you to consider all of our staff and judges as essential workers for purposes of vaccine distribution.
Please consider the addition of those serving in the aviation field to be included in phase 1B of vaccine allocation. A small group of essential frontline Alaskans who quite literally carry the responsibility of delivery of care to much of this state.
Providing vaccines to the staff and residents of the domestic violence shelters and service centers throughout Alaska will allow them to continue to support this vulnerable population in their time of crisis.
We're starting up our fishery in January again. You know, we are frontline workers. We are producing food for our nation's food supply.
ASIP estimates there are 30,000 essential workers in Alaska, 23,000 teachers, and 6,100 first responders like police and firefighters. Add them together and maybe 60,000 doses, times two for the booster shot, would cover those groups in phase 1B. Alaska's Vaccine Allocation Advisory Committee will meet later this week to better define who is in phase 1B. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Thank you, Robin, for that excellent story. And now here's the one about the Bristol Bay logistics of vaccine.
There are two ways the vaccines are being distributed throughout the region, either by bringing the person to the vaccine or taking the vaccine to the person. Around Iliamna Lake, it's the former. All the clinic workers in the area are flying to the hub clinic, Nilavina, to receive the vaccine. That hub, in the village of Iliamna, received 100 doses of the Moderna vaccine last week and started administering it to employees. Dustin Parker is the manager for the South Central Foundation's Iliamna Lake region.
Everyone's doing well. Everyone's very excited. And all of our employees in the Iliamna Lake region that serve these seven communities have all agreed voluntarily to receive the vaccine.
By the end of next week, all of the foundation's employees in the area will have received the first dose. Parker says they are staggering vaccine distribution among healthcare workers in case of any serious reactions. As the state moves through its vaccination plan and more people become eligible to receive it, South Central plans to set up vaccination clinics in villages around the region. The vials will remain frozen until they're needed. The communities will then tell the foundation how many people are set to get vaccinated. Parker says they will need to consider weather and timing when organizing the clinics. Once the needle is injected into the top of the Moderna vial, the vaccine must be used within 6 hours.
In Igiagic, for instance, they'll say, hey, we have 10 people that can receive this vaccine. And so we'll look at the weather and we'll plan on flying the vaccine over to Igiagic. The vaccine will be thawing in transit. And then once the health aides inject the vial, they will need to make sure that all 10 people on their list receive the vaccine.
Over to the west in the Bristol Bay Borough, 11 frontline healthcare workers and half of the EMS firefighters received the Moderna vaccine at the Chamai Community Health Center last week. 11 more people will be vaccinated this week. The clinic's director says they're staggering vaccine distribution in case anyone has a serious reaction. Adverse reactions to the vaccine are rare and easily treatable. Chamai will order the second doses in this round next week. For those in South Naknek, Chamai Director Mary Swain says the clinic will likely consider each person's health and risk factors to determine whether they will fly them to the clinic or administer it in the village.
The concern we have with flying over there is if there is a reaction, then that takes two legs to get them anywhere to a medical hospital. So it's a concern for us. We're still working on the logistics of that, but for those that are willing to fly over here, that would be ideal for us.
For now, the clinic is waiting for the state to announce further guidance on who will receive the next vaccinations. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Within Alaska's criminal justice system, the poor and vulnerable have experienced the greatest impact from COVID-19. KNOM's Colin O'Connor reports on what those in the court system are saying about those affected.
Indigent and marginalized populations are some of the hardest hit by the pandemic and the socioeconomic consequences of the pandemic.
That's Benjamin Muse, deputy director at the Alaska Public Defender Agency. He believes some of their clients have taken the brunt of the hardships dealt by the pandemic. The Alaska Public Defender Agency serves the public to provide legal representation to poverty-stricken clients who cannot afford an attorney. Muse notes that their work has been challenging in this unusual time. Even the Alaska court system did not have any fine-tuned plan to operate within the COVID pandemic, according to Chief Justice Joel Bolger.
We had a broad continuation of operations plan, and it included things like earthquakes and also included things like pandemics. But the plan did not envision a pandemic that was as severe and deadly as this pandemic.
Bolger and the presiding judges of the four judicial districts in Alaska meet weekly to discuss concerns and where action needs to be made. He believes that people's rights are being maintained to the best extent possible, consistently with the safety of everyone involved. The court and the Alaska Department of Corrections, DOC, has had to make adjustments in an effort to balance maintaining the judicial process and protecting the community from the transmission of the virus. Muse points out, this is where maintaining someone's rights to a fair and just process, like bail and speedy trial, can be overlooked.
There's kind of a desire in a situation like this to try to streamline things, you make things as efficient as possible, and we are working to make sure that our clients aren't neglected, that their rights are attended to during this time.
Muse says the pressure to reduce any backlog within the system means that new procedures must be implemented. Again, holding telephonic court hearings, suspending jury trials, and restricting visitation for those incarcerated. Muse also recognizes a unique challenge brought on by suspended jury trials.
We're dealing with clients who, some of them can't make bail and are languishing in prison without any end in sight of their case because they can't. They can't take their case to trial and be exonerated or bring finality to the legal proceedings that have been brought against them. You know, it's some of them are getting pretty desperate because we're going on a year come March with no jury trial.
Without the specter of trial looming on the horizon, Muse says, defense and prosecution are less likely to feel pressure to resolve a case. In a pre-pandemic setting, the legal parties would discuss a case and attempt to agree on a resolution based on the facts of the case. And when they can't come to an agreement, they move forward with trial proceedings. But with trials on hold, Muse says the defense and prosecution alike have no time constraints forcing them to delve deeper into the details of a case. District Attorney in Nome John Earthman agrees that cases are not reaching resolutions as they would pre-pandemic.
Trial and the clock does keep things moving, and the pressure of a trial does create resolutions. And not having that does defer resolutions.
This has left many people in a state of limbo. Being in limbo is something that many people can relate to during this time, but the effects are magnified while incarcerated. The Alaska DOC ended in-person visitation at the start of the pandemic. This not only limited the way which an incarcerated person has contact with their counsel, but also their friends and family. Muse says it has also posed a challenge for public defenders working to build a trusting relationship with their clients and being effective legal counsel. Moreover, it is having impact on clients' sense of hope.
Our clients are feeling very isolated. And as anybody can imagine who can imagine, if you're charged with a crime and you're maybe at the lowest point in your life and you're in custody, you probably want to speak with somebody. You want to speak with your attorney or your family members. So it's made things very difficult and it's been very hard on our clients.
The lack of quality communication in this time of stress creates the hopelessness. Across the state, in-person grand jury trial proceedings are suspended at least until February 1st, 2021, and in-person jury trial proceedings are suspended until at least March 15th, 2021. Reporting in Nome, I'm Colin O'Connor.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The commercial fisheries budget gets a breather. More after this.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Alaska is facing its toughest budget squeeze ever, but commercial fisheries are set to get a bit of a breather.
I think we did really well this year. We've had some pretty rough reductions over the last 5 years, 6 years. And this year, basically what we're getting is fund swaps. We're being almost held harmless.
Sam Raybung is director of the Commercial Fisheries Division, the largest division within the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, speaking at a recent United Fishermen of Alaska webinar. A proposed budget of $72.8 million reflects a slight loss in general funds, but it's offset by a swap from another source.
To offset that, we're being granted $855,000 increased authority for using commercial crew licenses. So we've been collecting more revenue from commercial crew licenses every year than we have authority to use. So it's kind of creating a piggy bank and keeps building, and that money rolls forward. And so we're going to be able to utilize those funds now in lieu of general fund.
Raybung says the Dunleavy administration now recognizes that commercial fishing more than pays its own way.
The revenue that comes into the general fund from commercial fishing activity is considerably more than the commercial fisheries division draws back out to fund our operations.
Raybung points out that the Comfish division also manages subsistence and personal use fisheries.
And ironically, in order to participate in a personal use fishery, you have to buy a sport fishing license. So sport fish division gets the revenue from that, although commercial fishing does the assessment and management for it. So commercial fishing as an industry supports an awful lot of other activities and may not get the credit they deserve for it.
Find the Comfish budget webinar at UFA's website and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Here's your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 30th day of December, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 9:54. It will set again at 4:31 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 38 minutes of precious daylight. That's a gain of 1 minute and 22 seconds compared to yesterday. We have a tide coming up at 1:37 this afternoon here on the east side, a 9.93-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:29 p.m., slight minus tide, minus 0.94 feet, almost a foot. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 2:11 p.m. That will be a 15.91-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:55 this evening, of minus 1.68 feet in Uganic Pass. 35 degrees right now here in Kodiak. We're looking for a 20% chance of snow tonight after 3 a.m. mostly. Mostly clear skies, though, overnight, becoming mostly cloudy toward daybreak with a low around 28. For tomorrow, look for a chance of snow before noon, then a chance of rain and snow. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 37 and northwest winds turning to the southeast. Could gust as high as 25 miles per hour tomorrow. And for New Year's Day, rain, likely. Cloudy skies with a high near 40 on New Year's Day. North wind about 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 25.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.